Welcome to Hot Plate, the conversations you should be having about your food and drink. I'm your host, Mirella Amato. Today on the Hot Plate, beer with a twist and food banks serving up more than just food. And on Curious Kitchen, a mousse gelatin hybrid carrot treat. So here we are, episode three. How are you feeling, Joshna?
I'm feeling really great.
Me too.
Episode three.
Ready to chat?
Mm-hmm.
So the topic I wanted to talk about today is wellness beers. So I'll just give you a little bit of context.
Tell me.
Wellness beers have been around for a while, but they hit the radar of the community about a couple of weeks ago because a major brewery in the U.S., Sierra Nevada, purchased a wellness beer company called Sufferfest. So when I'm talking about wellness beers, I'm talking about beers that are developed as recovery drinks. So they have like electrolytes or salts in them, sometimes pollen. It's kind of like if beer and Gatorade had a baby. So the idea is...
Okay, so it's still beery, though. It's still...
It's still a beer. Still grain-based, but there's the addition of these other ingredients. They also tend to be lower alcohol.
Sure.
Because, you know, after you've gone for... after our regular triathlons that we both do.
Indeed.
You know, the last thing we need is like an 8% alcohol beer. It's like having a glass of wine. That's not what you want. You want that refreshment. So they're lower alcohol, but they have all these added... you know, ingredients also to help with health and recovery post-exercise.
Ah, so it's an intentional post-exercise thing.
Yes. Yeah. Oh. That's why they were developed.
Okay.
They are available, widely available in bars and such.
Okay.
Full disclosure, I haven't tasted one yet.
Okay.
And I always believe it, you know, you have to try everything at least once.
Sure,
You know, it's possible that they taste great.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's not so much the taste that that upsets me, but just the whole notion of the need for a wellness beer.
Yeah.
Because the existence of a wellness beer sort of implies that beer in itself is not healthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And multiple scientific studies have shown that, you know, after running or after exercise, if you just have one beer, it will replenish, you know, a lot of the vitamins and nutrients that you want. It's super hydrating.
Right.
Of course, a lower alcohol beer. And so I think, you know, these wellness beers are in part a reaction to the direction craft beer has gone, which is bigger and bolder all the time. But, you know, instead of
and perhaps more niche at the same time.
Yeah.
Right.
But instead of just dialing back to, you know, a nice refreshing pilsner, you know, or a nice
refreshing
bitter.
There's wisdom in beering already that doesn't need to be tampered with is what you're saying.
Exactly. Exactly. Beyond that, you know, I was looking at the Sufferfest website and, you know, I don't want to pick on them, but I am going to.
Indeed.
You know,
it's our podcast.
I was on the website and what they have with each beer is, you know, the calorie count. Of course, they're all gluten-free. And then the carb count. So again, just exacerbating the notion that, hey, beer is just full of carbs and full of calories full of gluten. And it's just... I'm fascinated by the fact that this brewery has acquired the company. Clearly, they think, you know, there's a future there, but...
I'm sure sales reports are motivating, you know what I mean? Sales reports of this, and they're like, we want a chunk of this market share. Whether it's appropriate or not gets tossed out the window at that point, right?
If you take a step back and you look at foods that have like a light version, it's things like, you know, mayonnaise, which again, not unhealthy, but has been promoted as unhealthy now because, you know, people would rather eat, you know... a lower calorie.
Some whipped oil compound of something.
Chemicals
than just eggs and oil, right?
Cancer in a can.
Yep.
Instead of, you know, ooh, heaven forbid you should have an egg and some oil, right? It's just distorting the notion of what beer is, which is perfectly healthy, not very high in calories. Yes, there are carbs. Yes, there is gluten.
And perhaps
of course,
the problem shows up when you drink eight.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right? That's when it becomes an issue.
So the Radler is the original sort of post sport drink. Radler means bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
So Radlers were developed in Germany for, you know, days out, picnicking or cycling around, and you just want a beer.
And was it a halfy?
Half juice, half beer. Very, very
and 100%
hydrating.
Delicious.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I first read this piece, I actually misunderstood and thought that it was that the supplements that were in the beer were about trying to mitigate the pending hangover.
Oh,
right.
There's
and
no
I was
mitigating
just like,
that.
What are you? Exactly. I was like, you have to stop fighting it. But the other thing that really screamed at me was the fact that I see this with food all the time.
Right.
Right? It is. And I have the same objection because I don't like the suggestion that the original is an unhealthy thing.
Yes.
Right? So the idea of like healthy burgers or healthy mac and cheese. I was like, hey. This is all a matter of understanding.
Yeah.
Right? There actually is there's nothing inherently wrong with a dish of mac and cheese. It's mm-hmm. how you make it, what ingredients go in, how much of it you eat. Like, there's all these other factors, right? But what this boils down to for me is this notion that people just want a green light for deep consumption.
True.
Right?
True.
These things, I feel, are they open the door for people to guiltlessly just crank
Absolutely.
It back.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
When the truth is that we can't actually do that. There are
and
consequences.
Shouldn't.
Do you know what I mean?
For sure.
Like the notion of needing to binge on things makes you after won't need to step back a little bit and ask questions about what the compulsion is behind all of this. Why do you need a green light? Why do you need a context which you can consume with no limits?
Right. Yeah.
Right. What is going on?
It's like, remember back in the day when fat-free things came out and people thought, oh, that just means I can eat a whole box and not gain any weight.
Yes.
Do you remember when that was
yes.
the thing?
Yes. With this, and the package was green. I remember thinking green light. That is, you know, there's a subconscious connection there mm-hmm. where you're like, all the bad things have been taken out.
Right.
Right. And substituted with other things that are even more bad that we only know now, anyway.
Right. The bad things, quote unquote, being, you know, oils and fats,
yes,
which are not bad for you,
no.
And carbs, which are also not bad for you. And guess what? In its place, they put a bunch of chemicals
yeah, and
sugar. Which is what actually is bad for you.
Which is
shocking.
Horrible for you. Right.
I know.
Oh, man.
It's too much.
It's dangerous. It's dangerous, but I will be willing to put money down that they will do very well.
There's another thing at play here, though, that I did want to touch
yeah,
on.
Yeah, tell me.
Which is the trend towards functional foods. Right. So if you look at like the
Ooh,
trends in food
yes,
for a while,
yes,
it was
yes.
Fat free, then it became gluten free and so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth. And now the latest thing is, you know, let's put some turmeric in it. Let's put
100%.
Something.
And the superfood chase.
Antioxidant
yes.
in it. Something. And
yeah.
So again, this notion that beer isn't enough when it's packed with vitamins
right.
and minerals and
dare
antioxidants.
And
there was
some of that really good gut stuff too from for a fermented
the,
thing.
If
right?
there's yeast in there,
yeah.
Probiotics, absolutely. All that stuff. But this need to like add some kind of magical ingredient, like bee pollen. Do you see that happening
then,
in food too?
Definitely. We package food much more, obviously, right?
Right.
Because people are like, I'm buying one thing. Give me the maximum number of benefits.
Right.
From the $350 that I'm going to spend on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. When it's such a load of nonsense.
It is.
Right. Because we know things like really. Without fat, without coconut oil or ghee or something, the absorption of turmeric, not so much.
Really?
Right? It needs a vehicle. Right?
I didn't know that.
It needs something, right? And
so they're just throwing it in
yeah,
to be able
man.
To put it on
and
the label.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's such a thing as bad dose of turmeric. I think it's really good stuff, but it's nothing is isolated. Nothing can just be extracted and then put into something else.
It's like a magic
right?
word.
Precisely, right? And it connects to a carrot, right? We talk about beta carotene is the magic
yeah.
inside of a carrot, right? So we extract that and we put it into a capsule,
mm-hmm.
not connecting to the fact that the vitamin C that's also in the carrot is what helps open the door so that your beta carotene can in fact be absorbed.
Okay.
And the fiber that's in the carrot also helps to digest and break that down. So really the truth of this is eat the carrot.
Yeah.
Forget this other nonsense.
Don't inject beta
Just
carotene
eat the
into your beer.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't inject beta carotene into the beer. Have a beer, eat a carrot, and be much happier.
So by that logic, it is possible, we can't do the test right here,
mm-hmm.
but that by stripping everything out of that beer, the gluten
right.
and
yes.
Everything
whatever
else.
Whatever the sugars or whatever
that
it
they
is.
They have eliminated any potential vehicle for absorption
100%.
Of what they've added in.
100%.
Aha.
Right, without being a scientist, but if food,
it's a distinct possibility.
If the way we've dealt with food is any indicator, I would be willing to bet that is what's happening.
So there you go. I feel like that's the final argument for just having a nice, you know, 3.5% alcohol, best bitter after you run.
This is, right?
Let it, just one.
Just one. A thing in its purest form, always the best.
So, Josh, now, what did you bring for us today?
Something that I am really excited about is a piece I saw about a food bank in the U.S. That is broadening its service to the community.
Right.
And so in addition to food, obviously, they have also created a space to train chefs.
Right.
Right. And this is they've got some kitchen space and an instructor and to train chefs. Employable skills, obviously, is the piece, right?
But what, so are they training the people who are coming in to use
the
services?
Yes, they're training food bank service users, so community members, clients, however we understand those folks who are coming in. But if they're interested in building their skills and thinking about potentially working in a kitchen somewhere, this opportunity now exists for them. And they can get into the kitchen and spend a few, I think it was a few weeks worth of a course to build those skills. And I, like, my heart leapt when I saw this because this is exactly what the future needs to look like for us.
There's something really poetic about the fact that they're coming in to be fed and that they're being taught to feed others.
Oh, it's
that's beautiful.
It's really glorious. And it speaks so much to a more accurate and holistic sense of what food security has to be for a community.
Right.
Right. I remember when I was working at the Stop, my first days, I just spent observing programs everywhere just to sort of get a feel for what was happening. And I was the chef in that kitchen. And I worked in the food bank one day. And I prepared hampers and chatted with folks and all of that. And I realized that while income is a huge issue and it's something that urgently needs to be addressed in terms of our Canadians' ability to feed themselves, the knowledge poverty is a huge deal
because how to just prepare
how
a simple
cook,
meal,
right?
Yeah,
and what and where the wealth of food skills is coming from.
What to do with that can of beans?
This is it because you know carrots, onions, potatoes, rice.
Yeah.
It's cheap.
Yeah,
but if you don't know what to do with any of it, it all you are not that is not available to you.
They said in the article that there is a real need for, I think they called it mid-level chefs.
Yes.
In the what is that, and why do you think that particular type of chef is currently missing?
So mid-level chefs, it's QSR, quick serve restaurants.
Okay.
Right. So this is potentially any sort of food court or, you know, a fast food type scenario. But it's also like juice places, you know, and some of the more the fresher like Chipotle or whatever
Got
it would
it.
Be. Right. That's a mid-level scenario. I think that also will include institutional food.
Right.
Right. Cafeterias, you know, things like that. And to be honest, I'm not 100% sure what the wage climate is like in the U.S. I'm more connected to what's happening here in Canada.
Right.
But those are not easy jobs because they don't you don't always make a living wage. I'm sorry. The better way to understand that is that in the context of food security, when we're talking about food bank users, right, everybody is headed to that those are the jobs that you want. Those are the jobs
right.
that you will be able to lift yourself out of poverty with, right? Those are jobs where you can actually buy some real food and not have to rely on a food bank, right? Understanding, of course, that your food budget is your first sort of expendable budget after you pay your rent, because you got to pay, can't pay half your rent, right? So the food budget is the next big chunk and you start massaging that.
And I'm assuming that at that mid-level, it's also skills that you can bring home in terms of cooking
100%.
Skills.
100%. Your own personal food security will increase as well as your ability to have a job and a salary.
That's
right.
Fantastic.
And it's what I love about the messaging is it's this really beautiful illustration of how there's like a ripple effect of reanimating a community with good food.
Right.
Right. It's one thing to say, here's the food because we have to eat three times a day. And this is the sort of emergent scenario that we're in. But the other piece is how can you build skills and then how can you use those skills to earn a living, take care of yourself and potentially not have to walk through this door.
So fantastic.
As a chef, I want to pour all of my heart and resources into that kind of work because it just makes so much sense.
For sure.
Right? And I think the frustration is the fact that there's one story about this happening, right, in one town in the whole United States.
Not only that, but when you mentioned this, I looked around and there aren't even any articles about it. No one, why is right. no one making noise about this?
Exactly.
We both feel great about it. It's yeah. a wonderful story.
Precisely.
And it's doing well, I think.
Yep. So probably it sounds like it until the grant money runs out.
Okay.
Right? Or mm-hmm. until like that's the, it's also tenuous. That community has managed to cobble together some resources for itself. God yeah. bless them. Right. Who knows how long it'll last. But good for them for just figuring out, look, we're going to try this now and see where it leads us.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe there's a way for industry to participate if you know what I mean? There's this very clear way that this is now a source of great labor.
For sure. I mean, right? if restaurants can commit to hiring people, that's already
Precisely.
A great
they
start.
Have a place
that's not
to
even
land.
A financial investment for
Exactly.
them.
But it's definitely the way forward. Mm-hmm. And it's I think that pairing professional skills building with food bank users
mm-hmm.
Is a perfect, perfect way to find an innovative approach to an unfortunately old problem.
Yeah. And I feel like it's the kind of thing that eventually will run itself, you know, because those people who are learning can then teach and.
Yes. Ideally. Yes. Right. And then grow this, have a model that's exportable, connected, other food banks, other kitchens.
It's interesting because there are a number of other. I was in London, Ontario, a while back, and there was a cafe that was Ooh. All, I think it was recovering drug addicts, and they were all, it was, they employed only those people out of a specific program. And so there does seem to be this connection with food and rehabilitation into society or reintegration, I guess is what I'm looking for.
100%.
And it makes sense because you're learning to take care of yourself and you're learning to take care of other people.
And recovery is a lot about self-sufficiency.
Self-sufficiency and community at the same time.
You're right. One lovely bit that I heard in the same vein mm-hmm. was I was listening to a TED talk from a priest in the U.S.
Okay.
who was offered up grounds on their sort of monastery property for a kitchen garden.
Oh, beautiful.
Right? Which is a glorious thing on its own. But what they were intending with the garden is for it to be space for newly released convicts, mm-hmm. Newly released prisoners to work.
Yeah.
Right? And cultivate. And that was so successful that a little cafe grew on site.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But the thing that I love the most is that there was this one guy who did time, was convicted for meth production, right? He
right.
was part of a meth ring and convicted. He cooked the meth,
mm-hmm.
right? Full tattooed, all the things that you might think about this. Mm-hmm. But in the cafe, he discovered yeah. completely transferable skills
of
between meth roasting and coffee roasting.
Delightful.
And so he became the coffee roaster. And it's that delicate touch so nothing sits on the heat for
yeah,
too long
yeah.
and still toasts beautifully, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he is a master coffee roaster.
Oh, fantastic.
Full transferable skills, right? But is now connected and earning money and has like a little blessing that goes with every pound because obviously the monastery and that connection is there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a little blessing on the pound bag of everything that he sends out there. And he feels better about himself. He's found a legitimate way to use those skills.
Yeah.
And that's just a round of applause, man. That's a win.
So here's what's going through my mind right now.
Yeah.
It's sort of an ironic thought, but I think we're both in agreement that connecting with food and learning how to cook is like an excellent thing for people
yes.
to learn about. And, you know, they're learning it. These recovering addicts are being encouraged to do it. And often people who are coming out of jail,
mm-hmm.
you know, or even in jail are growing gardens and things like that, you know. And meanwhile, all these business people have no connection to their food.
Right.
They're ordering out every 5 minutes. They don't
yeah.
know how to cook.
Not at all.
They need a program.
Seriously.
Isn't
right?
that weird?
The irony is deep.
It's
right?
a
it's totally.
It's all I can think about
totally.
Right now.
It's not nothing at all, right?
The disconnection with the food at all levels.
Yep.
And somehow, you know, the more vulnerable people in our mm-hmm. society.
And thinking about who is and is not successful.
Yeah.
Right? And what that really means.
And they're the ones who are being afforded this opportunity or maybe are taking the time or have the time, but it's just that irony to me is fascinating.
It really is. When you go down to the path. Or
yeah.
so at lunchtime, and you just see suits and takeout containers.
Yeah. yeah.
Right? It's just styrofoam containers and people rushing around.
It's like you have to burn out, come out the other end, or develop like a cocaine habit.
Yes.
And like drop
Choose
off the deep
different
end.
Paths and then,
you know, go
right?
through jail and then come out, and then you'll learn
and realize
how to
have
that a good
relationship. Eating good
with your food.
Exactly. Just
that's
eating good
you
food is
to
the
do
answer.
To
it's a hell of a long road, but sometimes that's how we learn, right? My God, I love it. Thank you.
It's time for Curious Kitchen. Curious and Josh Kitchen. Curious Kitchen. I see you've brought something in.
I have. I know that the angle on the Curious Kitchen is usually sort of like kind of weirdo things that we have both not tried before.
Unusual.
And, you know, unusual sort of tastes. This one is, it is definitely unusual, and it is the first time I have made this. Which I'm very, it's very experimental. But essentially what this, it's an Indian sweet, and in Hindi it's called Gajar Ke Halwa.
Gajar
Ke, ke Halwa.
Halwa.
Gajar is Hindi for carrots. And halwa is like a sort of generic catch-all phrase for something that is made cooked on the stove into a bit of a paste, poured out, chilled, set, and sliced.
So this is like carrot cake.
No, well, there's no grain involved.
There's no grain. Okay.
There's no grain. And there's, yeah, other versions, like there's other have sesame halwa, you know, is that sort of thing. The best translation that I can give you for Gajar Ke Halwa is carrot milk fudge.
Okay.
Right?
I like that a lot better.
Okay. So this is carrots cooked down with lots of milk and cardamom, which is the brown girl cinnamon. I'm trying to float that out there. But cooked down substantially.
Okay.
Right? Over the process of about 2.5 hours last night.
So I'm having a look.
Yep.
There's a sprinkle of nuts on there. It looks like
pistachios.
Yeah, green. And I feel like it's a bit of a reddish tinge to it. It looks like it could be a brownie, but it's more of a gelatinous texture and reddish.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Is that the angle of the light?
No, you're right. I use purple heirloom carrots.
Ah, there you go.
So what this was about was finding ways to use local ingredients to make faraway recipes.
I like it.
Right? Thinking about sort of diasporic connections to local eating. So these are beautiful local heirloom carrots, organic dairy, ghee made with lovely organic local butter and maple syrup.
Okay. So traditionally these would be orange.
Yes. Would have been proper, bright, recognizable orange carrots.
Okay.
I decided to remix this a little bit.
I'm going to take a picture of these and we'll put it on the Instagram so people can see the gorgeous color. It really is a nice color. I'm going in.
Do it.
Ooh. It is a...
The texture is a sort of curious thing, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it gelatinous at all. It's softer.
And it reminds you of like a healthy, a good-for-you brownie. You know, a brownie that they put beets or red beans in or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And it's definitely like there's wet.
Yes.
Right? And it has, but there's a density to it that is, that makes you ask some questions, I think.
Oh, it's sort of halfway between a gelatin and a mousse, I would say.
Oh, I
texture-wise.
Like that.
Yeah.
The dairy does that, right? Mm. The cooked down dairy, I think, is what.
There's a caramelized smell to it that is intense and delightful.
Thank you. I'm excited that you're feeling good about it.
It's not smelling like carrots, and I'm okay with that.
Indian sweets are an acquired taste.
That was my first thought, because usually I skip dessert.
They're very sweet and intense.
Oh, the maple also comes through loud and clear. Yeah, I feel like it's really tasty, but I feel like two bites is enough.
It's
for me.
Insanely rich.
Really rich.
Right? It's insanely rich.
Oh, but the intenseness of the caramel and the maple.
And the carrotiness is what I love, right? And there's something in here about using those good ingredients that have great flavor. Using, you know, one of the most compelling things, aside from the environmental impact of organic dairy, is the flavor of the dairy.
Yes.
Right? It
for
goes way beyond the other stuff, more white sugar, commodity carrots, things will change.
It's interesting texturally in the mouth. It kind of melts, but then it leaves these little...
Yeah, the pulp of the carrot. It's
is
still
that what
there.
That is?
Yeah. It's the pulp of the carrot
texture.
That has been cooked down so much, it's sort of surrendered itself.
And just that burnt finish. I just need a really roasty...
Coffee.
I was going to say Russian Imperial Stout.
Ooh.
to wash this down. Coffee would do the trick as well. But I like the idea of the extra roast and also the hop notes, like an American style Russian Imperial Stouts with a little bit of citrus. I feel it would play really nicely.
I want to drink that right
off
now.
The caramelization. Mm. Great texture.
But it's a really curious sort of thing, right?
I'm going to be honest, it's a little sweet for me.
Yeah.
I don't think I can, and it's great that you cut them in these tiny squares, mm-hmm. but without a drink, it might be a little much.
Mm-hmm. It is super sweet.
But it matches my hair, and I love that.
That's really all that counts.
I have a soft spot for beers that match my hair, and I think I'm going to now develop a soft spot for foods that match my hair.
For desserts that say the same thing? Amazing. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for bringing this in.
Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Hot Plate Pod. Follow me at Beerology on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And follow Joshna at Joshna Maharaj on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you to Joshna for joining us today. Hot Plate is recorded at Eggplant Picture and Sound Studios. Our audio engineer is Brad Tigwell. Original music by Dave Bell. Hot Plate is produced by Mirella Amato, that's me, and Dennis Coyne. That's a wrap.